Coming up on episode 263 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Volvo C40, the Chevrolet Bolt, the VW ID. Buzz, the Kia Sportage, Jeep's new EVs, the Chevy Equinox EV, the Lexus RX, and more. All that coming up next. This is episode 263 of Wheel Bearings, and we're back after a little break for travel and concerts and assorted other stuff. I am Sam Abual Salmon from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakeland from the Fast Women Podcast.
I am Roberto Baldwin from Engadget.
And Robbie, why don't we start with you, because you drove something that not many people from this side of the Atlantic have driven.
Yes.
Finally. We've waited so long. I drove the ID. Buzz. Finally. 2017, Yay. They're like, hey, look at this car. And everyone's like, oh my God, look at that van. It's amazing. And then they're like, yeah, it'll come eventually. So I went over to Copenhagen, and they stuck me in the car, and I drove it into Sweden and back. I went over the bridge from that TV show, The Bridge, if you're in the Swedish.
I've driven over that bridge.
Yeah, yeah. And I kept telling everyone, I'm from the TV show. And people are like, what are you talking about?
I feel like I'm missing out. You both know about the bridge. I don't know about this bridge. I've never driven over it.
So there is a bridge between Copenhagen and I forget the city on the Sweden side, basically across the channel between Denmark and Sweden.
Okay.
And there was a show that was on, I think it was on FX here.
I don't know. It was.
They did a remake of a show here called The Bridge. And it was a remake of an original Danish or Swedish show by the same name. And basically cops, it was a procedural drama thing with a cop from each side of the bridge trying to solve a murder.
Someone was murdered and then left on the bridge right where the country.
So the jurisdiction was unclear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anywho, so I drove over that bridge. Just the weirdest aside. The ID. Buzz. So there's a lot of caveats into this. I drove the ID. Buzz, yes. But I drove the European spec, which meant it was the short wheelbase version. It only has two rows. It doesn't have the third row. It doesn't have the long wheelbase that we'll get here in the United States. The battery pack that they have over there, 70-something, it doesn't matter. Because they wouldn't tell me what the battery pack was coming to the United States. There's a lot of things that they're like, you get to drive this vehicle, and here are all the European specs, but we can't tell you the U.S. specs, because between now and then.
So you don't know how close it was. It could be very different or just a skosh different.
A skosh different. Someone heard that it was going to be 9 inches longer, the wheelbase, for the American version, which makes sense in order to throw that third row in there. Mm-hmm. I actually really like the short wheelbase version just because, you know, it's easier to park. I don't have a lot of friends, so I don't need a third row. You have this nice storage.
Is there enough room in there with the dog for the dogs though?
Oh yeah, totally enough room for the dogs.
It's, okay.
Yeah, especially if you put those seats down. Yeah. Perfect. It's the perfect dog vehicle. It's what the Honda Element should be if it were an EV, is essentially what it is. Honda Element, official car of the dog walker. So I drove it. It was fun. It wasn't fast because it's a van. It wasn't, you know, it doesn't have tight steering because it's a van. It's everything that it's exactly what it's supposed to be, which is so many vehicles are trying to be a little bit more than they're supposed to be, or they don't quite reach where they're supposed to be. And there are very few vehicles that are kind of exactly where they're supposed to be. One of them is the Kia Soul. The first time you get in a Soul, you're like, oh, this is exactly what this vehicle needs to be. Same thing with the ID. Buzz. It's exactly what it needs to be. It's comfortable. It's easy to drive. It's, you know, it's got room. You know, you got plenty of room in the front. You got plenty of room in the back. One of the issues I did find was that there was no rear climate controls and no vents back there. But again, I have no idea if that's going to be like that when it comes to the United States.
Yeah. Right.
But all the sort of hype around it, you know, we've all been waiting for it. It is, it's exactly what it's supposed to be. It's their infotainment system works fine. Works just
no
like
lag,
it's supposed to.
No lag.
No. Well, I mean, everything's going to have a little bit of lag, but like, not like before, like you turn the car on, it comes on. You know, stuff
there's
like that.
There's a concept. You're not driving for 5 minutes before, the screen finally pops up.
Decided to join us.
When you swipe, it follows your finger as opposed to a swipe and then like a little wait and seeing how it feels and then swipe. Like everything it's supposed to do, it does. So it was nice. It's going to be vehicle to load, which is a big selling point for me because this seems like it'll be like maybe a second car for some people, or maybe a first car for others. But if it's a second car and it's at your house, if you do vehicle to load, you can use it to like power your house or,
Did they say how much power it'll be able to put out?
No, they didn't tell us anything. Again, the only thing we know, the only thing that really carries over is the 170 kilowatt charge rate.
Okay.
Which is, I wish it was above 200, especially for a vehicle that's sort of built for road trips. And for camping and for all that, I wish it was, 220. I wish it was just, I wish they had gone a little, the extra mile and put it on an 800-volt architecture. But they didn't. 170 is fine. It's about 80. I'm guessing we'll probably get an 80-something kilowatt-hour battery pack over here. We'll probably get about 240 when it comes to range, maybe 250. I think the answer I got, is between now and then, we don't know, battery technology might get better. The chemistry might get better. The pack, it's going to be larger, so we might have a larger pack. There was a lot of we're not really sure, so we're not telling you kind of thing. So we have a year before it gets here. It's supposed to be, it's launching in Europe this year. It's launching in the United States next year. So the Europeans will have it. They'll test it out. They'll get, they'll be essentially the guinea pigs for that first year. I typically tell people, I'm like, if you want a car, and unless you really, really want it, wait till the second year of it be out. The first year is always when they find, weirdness. If you look at all the big hype cars that have come out this year, almost all of them have some little weirdness that's happened because it's the first year.
All I can think of is the fact that the wheels are falling off of the BZ4X. So
exactly, yeah.
As long as the wheels don't fall off, you're doing all right.
Yeah, as long as the wheels don't fall off, you don't have engine failures. It's just some engine issues with Ford and some of their vehicles, and
Bronco V 2.7 liter V6 was dying.
Yeah, so that's sort of to be expected because we've made 1,000 of them and they all seem to be okay. Now you have to make 100,000 of them, and when you're doing that, that's when you find out there's this issue. It's first year just sort of shaking things out. The BRZ and the GR86 and their weird oil issue. So the Europeans get to figure that out with the ID Buzz on the first year. Any wheels fall off or anything like that, the Europeans will have to deal with that. And hopefully by the time we get it, all that will be sorted out. I'm looking forward to the vehicle. I like it. I have no idea how much it costs. Literally no clue. $50,000 probably. Maybe in the 40s. It'd be nice if they could start at 40. We're going to get a rear-wheel drive and an all-wheel drive version over here. I drove the rear-wheel drive version of it. Driving it around Copenhagen and the city I was in Sweden, people were like, there's a man who followed us and who pulled over and who talked to me and my co-driver about the vehicle. And we're like, hey, you want to take pictures and sit in the car? We don't care. Go for it. And he's like, yay. And he was all excited.
Wow.
And then we found out that he had talked to other people. He had a shirt with all the VW, with all the microbuses on it.
So he's like a hardcore fan.
Yeah, he had a Polo R.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were like, oh my God, what? So ID Buzz, the hype, if you're expecting like some sort of crazy super machine, that's not what it's supposed to be.
So this is not a Ford super van.
It is not a Ford super van. It is exactly what it should be. If you've ever driven a microbus, which are A, kind of difficult to drive, B, slower than molasses.
Yeah, this is probably going to be a lot faster than a
bus. It's a lot quicker than the classic bus, but it's, you drive it around.
I mean, those had 40, 50 horsepower?
If that. Yeah. I think it was like 46 horsepower from, I think some had the 1.6. Oh my God. They were just not, 0 to 60 in about 5-6 minutes was the old. So yeah.
Downhill with tailwind.
I'm looking forward to driving the long wheelbase, all wheel drive version when it comes over here. Again, I will drive this vehicle again and again and again. I'm happy that it's here. This is like one of those vehicles that I was really excited about, that the Honda E, never getting a Honda E. The ID Buggy. Never getting the ID Buggy, but there's the Myers Manx that's coming, and now we have the ID Buzz. So, yeah. What? Got any questions for me?
Well, one thing. The city on the other side of the bridge is Malmo.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I'm looking at Google Maps.
Malmo.
Just to clarify.
Yeah. I'm sorry, the city of Malmo. It was very delightful. Yeah, as well, are most Swedish cities.
Sweden is always a delightful country.
It is a delightful country.
That's fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there you go, Malmo and Copenhagen. Two great tastes, taste great together.
But, yeah, no, the Buzz, you know, they've done, I mean, it's not exactly like the original concept was, but it's close enough, and I think it is a cool looking van. It's probably the coolest looking van since the second generation Toyota Previa.
Oh yeah,
so not the first one that was more boxy, but the second one that was kind of sleek looking. It looked kind of like a space pod.
Yeah. That was a cool van. I remember the Chevy Astro. Remember Chevy Astro?
I remember the Astro.
Oh,
the Astro was huge, especially in the speaker scene and the aftermarket radio scene. Like that was the official car of, like, I have 70 subwoofers in the back of my vehicle was the Chevy Astro. So we're getting back. Vans are cool again.
Vans are cool.
All right.
Just got to talk more people into getting more vans.
Just got to convince everybody else that they're cool again.
Vans and wagons are great for EVs, too, because there's just so much space to just put a giant battery in. And so it'll be interesting to see how it when it comes over here. Interesting to see, like, what sort of packages you can get. I mean, I would like it if they had just, like, a rubber floor, like the old Element, where you just hose it out.
That was so cool. That was the best feature of that car.
I don't know why people, like, we got to put carpet in here. I'm like, really, do we, though? Like, I'm wearing shoes.
I'm wearing shoes. We don't need carpet. We're fine.
And any car that I've had that I take, like, outdoorsy, like when I had my WRX, it had rubber. It had, like, the rubber, like, everything inside because I got on top of the carpet.
No, it's like, you know, Jeep Wranglers. Does your Wrangler have carpet or rubber?
Mine has got, I know that we have these, like, really rugged rubber floor mats on it, but they go so close to the edge. I don't know if it's just rubber all through or if it's carpet under there.
I don't know if they even do carpet in Wranglers.
I don't think they do, but we have these, like, floor mats that could, I feel like they could hold a gallon of water. Like, they're really deep crevices. So, like, in the winter when you've got snow on your boots, you suddenly look in the car, you're like, there's a lot of water. I feel like I should just take this out and dump it.
It's a tiny little river.
Like a little pond floating around in the floor mats.
I spilled a giant iced tea once in my WRX, and it just went all into the giant rubber floor mat. And it was perfect. I just...
See?
And, you know, the Bronco, has rubber floors, but they even have drain plugs in the floor. Jeez. So that, you know, you can hose it out and it'll just drain right out. You don't even have to dump anything out. It just goes automatically.
There you go.
Just get rid of carpet. I don't like carpet in houses.
And if it's terrible. Like, it's in a car because, too, even if you have floor mats, if you have any kind of car, if you get salt on the carpet, like living in New England, it will perpetually be salty. It is
looking
there forever. You have a little white ring and then it just expands as it gets wet. And then you have this big circle. It's like trying to get a spot out of your shirt, and you're like, oh, I got it. And then it dries, and you have this horrible stain on your shirt. That's what your floor looks like, and the carpet in your floor looks like forever in your car.
Just get rid of carpet altogether.
Get rid of the carpet. That would save each of us $2 on the invoice price, right? Like, if we got rid of carpet.
At least. Maybe three.
In the summer, I do a lot of driving without my shoes, which I think, for some reason, outside of California and Hawaii is weird. I don't understand. It's hot. I'm just going to drive without my shoes. I wear flip-flops. I get in the car. I don't want to drive with flip-flops. That sucks.
That's dangerous.
So I drive with my shoes. They get stuck on stuff. Yeah, they get stuck on things. I move those out of the way, and I drive with I don't want carpet.
Well, and you get better sensitivity there, you know, when you're modulating the brake and the throttle.
You can wrap your toes around the clutch, you know, a little bit, get a little grip on there.
Exactly.
Like a little monkey. I actually do that. I actually grip the clutch like a little monkey in my BRZ.
So I want everybody to know that I drive like a normal human with my shoes on and don't use my monkey toes to grip the clutch in a car. I just want to clarify this.
Yeah, but you live in the far north. You can't.
Yeah,
you have to wear shoes, year round.
If I go bare feet, I get frostbite even in July. Is that what happens?
I mean, can you even take a shower without your shoes on?
know. You have to wear shoes all the time. You never take your shoes off.
Yeah. I tweeted that once, and everyone was appalled. Like, everyone who wasn't from California was like, I can't believe, what?
I'm
like,
why did I think it was illegal to drive without your shoes on for some reason? Where did I get this in my head?
It was maybe in some places.
It was a whole thing in the 80s. In the 80s, my parents told me that it was illegal to drive.
That's what I'm getting this. My dad told me that, and I think it was my dad. I'm Googling, is driving without your shoes on illegal? But I swear I thought it was legal. He said that to me, and I have carried that with me my whole life.
Yeah, I remember parents telling everybody, and then we all looked it up one day once we had, like, the internet, and it turns out it wasn't
no
illegal.
No federal or state laws prohibit driving a car without shoes. See? I was today years old. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So go ahead. Drive without shoes like me with your monkey toes.
All right. There you go.
All right. Sorry, speaking of driving, Nicole, what have you been driving?
I was driving the 2023 Kia Sportage X-Pro Prestige all-wheel drive to get the full, complete title out there.
More name excess.
But you know what? It was funny. Somebody was reading the title of, like, some new TV that came out, and it was like the new Panasonic X54 300C-4-9. I'm like, suddenly car names seem really easy. It was this huge, long. Yeah. So I think the tech industry has them one-upped with the crazy names. So the Sportage is all new for 23. I had it this week to drive, just, you know, knock around town, which is great. But I did the launch for this, and they had us take it off-road. So they have certain trims that are like the X. There's an X Pro, and there's an X line. I have the X Pro, which is the most off-roady of the lot. And it's kind of funny because, you know, when they say a car can off-road and it's not something you traditionally think of, like Sportage is not what you think of to take in the dirt, you're really kind of skeptical, and you think, okay, fine, whatever. Like, that's cute. You think that's going to off-road, and it's not. But you know what? Yeah, because a lot of the times it's the case. You're like, my standard is, if I could take a Camry on it, I'm not really off-roading. Like, and that very often is the case. If a Camry can do it, it's not an off-road vehicle, no matter how many cute little names you give all your technology. This, however, did things that a Camry could not do. When we were out there, they really had us take it in the dirt. They really had us take it off-road. It was this nice little technical course to show. And it's not like Jeep off-roading. It's not like Bronco off-roading. But pretty impressive for, a two-row SUV. And the X-Pro gets a little extra ground clearance. I think it's 1.5 inches extra ground clearance compared to other trims within the lineup. And it gets this, like, drive mode selector that has normal, sport, smart, and snow, I believe, the four modes. So it can actually, if you want to do that little bit of light off-roading, you got, you know, a little lake you want to go to, and there's a little off-road trail, you know, you've got to go to the out in the field or whatever, not rock crawling people, but like light off-roading, this can actually do it. I was really impressed when we drove this. So it has under its little hood a 2.5-liter four-cylinder engine, 187 horsepower, 178 pound-feet of torque. It goes. It's not a super aggressive vehicle. If it's something you're looking for, a really, really super aggressive drive, you're not going to get it, but it is more than competent to get itself out of its own way, and it was fun to drive. It's got an 8-speed automatic transmission. It's a nice car to drive. It's a nice, pleasant SUV for the family. I have to comment on the color because my daughter commented on the color. It's this kind of green color, like a dark green, not like a bright emerald, like a darker green. And I said, what do you think? She's like, I don't like this green. I said, she's like, I don't know what they call it, swamp green. It's actually jungle green, but in her head, she's like, swamp green. And the more I stood there and looked at it, I'm like, I can see that. It's like this very dark kind of mossy color that is jungle green or swamp green, if you're a sarcastic teenager. Things that I really liked. This is one of our first cold mornings in New England where you have to wear shoes all the time. And weird. I turned on the heated seats and the heated steering wheel, and I swear everything was warm in about 2.5 seconds. Like, you didn't have to wait at all. I could instantly feel my cold fingers warming up on the wheel, which is a big thing given that it's cold here so much. I was very happy with this, and I wasn't waiting for it to warm up. So it warms up really, really quickly. A couple other things that I just think are just nice touches. The lights on the interior, you don't actually push the lights. It's like a little tap, 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 and you get a light, tap, 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 it goes out. So it's kind of neat that it's a little tap light. And also, I had forgotten the Monroney in the car before the show, and I went running out to the car to grab the Monroney. And it doesn't have like a puddle light, but just the light in the door handle, like right where the handle is, kind of lights up on approach when you have the key in your pocket. And it's kind of nice, a little bit of light so that you can kind of see what you're doing. So I appreciated that.
Well, when you're out in the off-road, you know, the puddle light's not going to be that helpful in the dirt.
Right.
So, you know, seeing the where the door handle is probably be more useful.
Yeah, the door handle. So it was kind of nice. Also, there's got it has a nice interior. The interior is it's Kia does a really good job of making their interiors feel a little bit more than what you're paying for, which I always think is nice. Everybody likes to feel like they've gotten a good deal, and you will, because it does feel like a pricier car in terms of the looks and the comfort than what it actually costs. And you get things like this one has the dual 12.3-inch display, like for instrument cluster and for infotainment. So it has that very tech, like of the future kind of vibe. Like you feel like you're buying a new car that has all the cool stuff, which I like. So the price. Oh, wait. What do you think the destination is? Guess.
$1,295.
Wait. Who said what? $1,295 was Sam and $1,200 was Robbie?
Yeah.
Robbie's going to win because it was $1,215. But you're both really close, $1,215. So that gives this trim. And again, the X-Pro Prestige all-wheel drive sits at the top of the lineup. It is $38,555. So it's not a cheapy cheap SUV, but you're getting a pretty, like, you get a lot for that price. And it feels like it looks like it. The styling and everything is very modern. And everything look, you know, because it's all new for this year, there's nothing like or last year sort of, you know, it looks very automotive forward instead of fashion forward, automotive forward in how it's designed and how it looks. I like it. I mean, this is a car I'd be perfectly happy driving if I was looking for a two-row SUV, especially for a family. Good cargo room, comfy ride, all that good stuff.
Yeah, and I was, while you were describing it, I was looking to see if they offer the turbo four-cylinder in the Sportage, and they do not. So it's just, you have that normally aspirated 2.5, or there's a hybrid.
Yes.
And a plug-in hybrid variant.
I want to say it was just the straight-up hybrid we drove. I mean, the drive program was a little while ago now, and I'm truly drawing a blank. I'm 99% sure it was just the straight up hybrid. I liked that hybrid engine. I liked that powertrain. I thought that was really good. I was a fan. I'm almost positive it's just straight up hybrid. Forgive me for not remembering which months after the fact. And I didn't look it up before I sat down. But yeah, that was, I thought, sort of the two, I liked the hybrid. I just felt like that was a little extra oomph there. So if you're looking for a little bit more performance, a little bit stronger performance, I would say the hybrid feels that when you're behind the wheel. So,
yeah, and the hybrid's got the 1.6 liter turbo with the, you know, with the added electric propulsion. And I actually had one of those. I had the hybrid back in June. And you're right. It you know, if you do want that a little bit of extra performance than what you get with the gas one, then the hybrid's a really good choice.
Yeah.
Or the plug-in. Yeah, you know, which will get you over 30 miles of electric range too.
Right.
Excellent. All right. Well, I've driven a couple of different EVs since we last spoke. I had first up the Volvo C40 Recharge Twin Ultimate, which is the C40. When you first look at it, yeah, it looks like it's basically just an XC40 with the roofline chopped off to give it a coupe-ish profile. I'm not going to call it a coupe because it's not a coupe, but it's a fastback crossover. But when you look at it closer and you compare it to the XC40, there's actually a lot of little detailed differences, you know, that set it apart from the XC40. I think it's a cool looking vehicle. I drove it back in February, March, April, early this year in Palm Springs when they did the drive program. Was really impressed with it there. So this is the same, you know, it's built on the same platform as the Polestar 2. The Polestar 2 launched with the same dual motor, all-wheel drive configuration. They've since added the single motor, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. But the C40 only comes as the dual motor. So that's 402 horsepower and 486 foot-pounds of torque, which is quite a lot, you know, this thing is quick. It's shockingly quick for what it is. It's got traditional, you know, Volvo, interior, you know, that's kind of modern, semi-minimalist. It's not ostentatious. It's not minimalist, but it's not ostentatious. You know, and the look of the interior is the same as what we've had on the XC40, you know, since it came out, I don't know, four or five years ago, mm-hmm. Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, the rear seat is, I can sit in, you know, I can put the driver's seat, you know, where I would be. I'm 5'11", and I can sit behind myself, but I don't have a whole lot of clearance. But there is adequate headroom, despite the roof profile. There's you know, it's definitely adequate headroom. And we took it, you know, during Labor Day weekend to go to the lake and go paddleboarding. I had my wife, one of her friends, and Daisy, as well as paddleboard in the cargo area and a couple of beach chairs. You know, so it definitely passes the paddleboard tests. I was able to put the inflatable paddleboard and a couple of beach chairs and, you know, assorted other detritus back there, and still have room for three adults and a corgi inside. So that was good. No complaints from the backseat passengers. The C40 and the XC40 Recharge, the electric versions, were the first Volvos to get their Android automotive based infotainment system. So it's basically the same system that's in the Polestar, but it does have a different UI in here, where the Polestar's got like four quadrants on the screen. On the Volvos, they've got like four horizontal bars for the current running things that are there. And you know, it works fine. Log into, if you have a Google account, you can log in there, download your apps. One thing that was a little disappointing, you know, there is a ChargePoint app that you can download in there. Electrify America has an Android app in addition to an Apple app, an iOS app, but they have not put it in the Play Store for Android Automotive yet, which is a little odd. You know, I would think, you know, that they would want to get that in there for, mm-hmm. for, since a lot of the cars with Android Automotive happen to be EVs. There, you know, that, and when I took it to charge it, at my local EA station, it was only charging at about 40 kilowatts instead of the 150 kilowatts it's capable of. And like the Polestar 2 that I had recently, when I tried to use my charging cable, my 9.6 kilowatt charging cable at home, it would not charge. It would not properly connect. Mm. So apparently it's got the same software in there with the same bug in there that Polestar told me about. There's a software issue that it would not authenticate with my particular charging cable. There's something about it. It wouldn't work. So I did have to use the charger that came with the car. But that worked fine. You know, charges it up, does a full charge overnight in about, you know, 6 or 7 hours, I think. It's a 78 kilowatt hour battery pack. The C40 does not have a particularly impressive EPA range, 226 miles. The Polestar, the dual motor Polestar 2 is a little bit more than that. I think it's about 235 or something, somewhere around there. But you know, it's adequate. You know, anything over 200 miles, you know, is fine. It's mm-hmm. gonna take care of most people's needs without any issue. Bottom line price on this, basically the C40 comes with everything pretty much standard, $60,540. And bids on the destination charge?
$920.
I was going to go $1,325.
Robbie wins again. $1,095.
Dang it!
So that's the Volvo C40, which, you know, if you want a compact, you know, stylish-looking EV, with, you know, fastback profile, you know, sort of coupe-ish profile, that, you know, feels premium, rides really well, handles well, it's quick, you know, definitely worth a look. The other thing that I had earlier this week when I was out in San Francisco, and I saw Robbie there on Tuesday night, was a Chevy Bolt. I was out there for a couple of days because Cruise was doing an event at their headquarters, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. And I had some other meetings with some other companies in the Bay Area. So I got a Chevy Bolt 2LT that I was driving around for a couple days. And had the Bolt EUV earlier this summer. Was really impressed with that. I'd previously driven the Bolt in its original form before they updated it, gave it a new, an updated interior and a bigger battery. I've always liked the Bolt. Same thing with this one, driving it around the Bay Area, mostly highway driving. Driving 65, 70, 75 miles an hour. Had the air conditioning on a lot of the time because it got fairly warm because there's a lot of glass area on this thing, which is great because you got lots of visibility. But sitting out in the sun, it also means it'll get a little warm sitting in the sun, lots of solar load. Still managed to average about 3.5 miles per kilowatt hour, which would have worked out to about 230-ish miles of range. It's rated at 259 EPA, which is combined. In city driving, it's not hard to approach 300 miles with a Bolt, especially if you're using the one-pedal drive mode and you're maximizing that regen. Highway driving, any EV is going to do worse. This one did better than pretty much anything I've driven recently on highway driving, consistent highway driving. I like the way the Bolt drives. It's great in a city like San Francisco, where it can get crowded and maneuvering, trying to parallel park can be a challenge because it's got a nice compact footprint to it, which is really good. It's roomy. As I said, one of the things I like about it is the visibility out of it. The belt line, especially like from where, from just behind you down to the A-pillars, it dips down quite a bit. So you see a lot out of this thing and you sit fairly upright in it, which is, it doesn't feel like a sports car, but it handles quite nicely. I've always liked the handling of the Bolt. And you can see everything around you, which is great. So the Bolt that I had, the sticker price on it, on the Monroney, is $36,165. This was a 22 model. This was the 2LT. So on the 22 models that might still be around, GM is giving like $6,000 discounts on them because they had already announced, once they announced the price on the 23 model year cars, which were cut by roughly $6,000, they applied the same discount to the 22s. So if you can find a 22 model, you're going to get this one, the 2LT, which is the upper trim level, for about $30,000 out the door. The 1LT, the base model, you can get for 26 and a half, 27 roughly, including delivery. And one of the things I like that GM has done in recent years is they actually include the destination charge in the price that they advertise. So whatever price they say, if it's $26,500, that includes the destination charge, which is, I think, what everybody should be doing. Mm-hmm. So I liked the Bolt. I still like it. I think it's, aside from the fact that the DC fast charging is limited to 50 kilowatts, everything else about this, I definitely recommend this to people if they're looking for, a smaller but still roomy car that drives well. It's very efficient, very energy efficient, easy to park. Definitely worth a look if you're looking for an EV. And at $26,500 starting price, this is the cheapest EV you're going to find by a wide margin with over 200 miles of range. Mm.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. All right. So this week was the return of the Detroit Auto Show after a 3.5 year hiatus.
How was it?
There were cars there.
There were cars.
There were some people there.
Yeah. Did you go?
I went today. Yeah.
You did go.
Yesterday I was traveling. Yesterday was the media day as we're recording. We're recording this on Thursday night.
Yes.
Wednesday was the media day. I was on my way back from San Francisco, so I did not go on the media day, but it was still open to media today and was also the industry preview day. And I went down. I had some meetings with a few different companies there today. And I took a walk around the floor and, you know, saw the stuff.
I think you got the better day of the two because I understand yesterday was a bit, shall we say, off kilter because there was President Biden decided to visit, which is all well and good, except, yo, Biden, it's the media day. You're messing everybody up. So everyone was freaking out because security was very tight.
I was seeing pictures in my Instagram feed of people, you know, showing the hour-long line for security.
I think if you timed it right.
I was trying to figure out what was going on. That's never happened before at the auto show. Even when there were, you know, 5,000-6,000 media there,
right?
We never had that kind of lineup for security.
No. Apparently, it was just the security. And if you got in at the right time, the security was okay. If you didn't get in at the right time, heaven help you getting through the security that was so tight for the president. Which I get. The president needs the security. But then, if you were trying to leave at the wrong time too, apparently, I had some colleagues who couldn't get out the door they wanted to get out. And it's like, you should go out this way. You should walk that way. You'll go around there. Come back. She's like, I think I walked a mile and I haven't really gotten out of the area yet to the street. I just want to leave. Yeah. She's like, this is where I live now. So it was chaos a little bit yesterday. So I think you lucked out, Sam.
Well, it's funny. I was talking to somebody today who was there yesterday, and she said that, you know, she was in the line for like 45 minutes or something like that. It was slowly moving forward. And then just as she got up towards the front of the line, they said, okay, everybody can go in now. Because apparently he had left the building.
He had left.
Oh, geez.
And so they said, okay, security's done. You can walk in.
Like, have at it. We don't care now.
And this morning, you know, I just you know, flashed my badge, just walked in, you know, nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So see, you chose well.
Yes, I did. I got lucky. And, you know, to be fair, the few vehicles that were being announced for the auto show that were kind of relevant, I had already seen before. I'd been pre-briefed under embargo and had written stories about them anyway. So let's talk about a couple of those. Let's start off with the electric Jeeps. Jeep had their 4xe day last week.
Yes, 4xe.
And they showed off, they revealed their first three EV Jeeps. One is for Europe only. The other two are both Europe and North America. So let's start with the Europe model. So earlier this year, Jeep published a couple of images of a cute little yellow crossover that they said was going to be their first EV. That vehicle is the Jeep Avenger, bringing back a name that I don't think anybody was particularly clamoring for. The Jeep Avenger is a subcompact crossover that is actually smaller than the Renegade, which is why they're not even going to bother to
try and sell it. Is it really smaller than the Renegade? I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, when you see the pictures of it in isolation, it doesn't look like it's particularly small because it's got the, you know, fairly big wheels for the size of the vehicle.
Yeah.
But they said it's quite a bit smaller than a Renegade.
Oh, it's a wee little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense in upbringing here. But the fact that it's a Jeep Avenger and it has nothing to do with the Avengers is breaking my brain. I can't. Like, it's not a superhero in any way. Well, color me disappointed.
So the Avenger will have about 250 miles of range. Europe market only, maybe a few other global markets, but definitely not North America. Then the next two that they showed off are going to be coming. In fact, they're going to be built here. We don't know which plants they're going to be built in, but they're going to be built in North America for the North American market and exported to Europe. And that is the Jeep Recon and the Wagoneer S. So let's start with the Recon. What do you think?
I like it. I think it looks cool.
It looks shorter than it is when you look at it like a three-quarter angle, and then they show a profile like, oh, man, that's a really long.
It's the same size as the Wrangler.
It's another Jeep that you can take the doors off of, and it's going to have the power folding roof.
Yeah.
I like it.
And you can take off the rear quarter windows and the back window as well.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of cool. It's like the Jeep. Is it bigger or smaller or the same size?
They said it's about the same size as the Wrangler. But the difference is, you know, when you look at the Wrangler body, the body is actually pretty narrow.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got these big fenders on it, and the body's narrow, which means that inside, you know, it feels narrow. It doesn't feel particularly wide in the cabin. And this one, when you look at it, it looks like kind of a cross between a Land Rover Defender, a Bronco, and the front end of the new Grand Cherokee.
It's like when you get those dogs that are mini breeds. It's like, yeah, it's a Terrier Labradoodle or something. Yeah.
And so, but that what that means is that the body actually stretches out closer to the perimeter of the vehicle. So it's going to be quite a bit wider inside.
So it's the Wrangler's like slightly beefier brother.
Yeah, slightly more refined brother.
Beefier brother. More like refined? He's the lawyer.
He's got the stockier build of the two.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it looks great from what they said. I mean, we don't really have any details other than doors come off, roof folds, grill is lighted. Like, we don't have the details of the powertrain at all, but I mean, I sort of just judging looks, and I love the grill. It'll have Wrangler style
off-road capability. You know, it's got the wheels pushed to the corners, so really short approach and departure angle, or really steep approach and departure angles, and you know, lots of ground clearance and everything. You know, it'll be what people expect of a Jeep.
Get the grill, the light-up grill. How cool is the grill? The grill's really cool, guys. Yeah. It's cool. Yeah. It's all lit up. It's like, because I'm an EV, so I'm gonna make my grill electric.
Look at me.
It looks cool. I love how it looks.
It's really the Wrangler most people should buy, to be honest.
Yeah, probably.
Right, the people who buy a Wrangler and who never intend to do anything, like, don't necessarily need Wrangler. They want the style, but they don't maybe want the roughness of it. This looks like this is going to be your thing.
That's your jam. Yeah. Like, you know, I want to do a little off-roading.
Just a little bit of off-roading, but I want a Wrangler. No, you don't. You want a Recon.
You want to know that, you know, if for some reason you ever decided to go to the Rubicon Trail or to Moab, you would be perfectly capable of going
just
down that
offhand,
trail.
And
you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah, just found yourself there. Oops, well, I guess this is how I'm going home. You could still do it.
I was driving across Utah, and I found myself driving past a sign that said, "Welcome to Moab." So I said, what the heck? Why not?
Let's give it a go and see what happens.
What could go wrong?
Nothing.
Let's roll our Jeep onto the side because I don't know what I'm doing. But I got all the things. I bought all the things. It shouldn't have rolled. You're like, well, you don't really know what you're doing. Did you bring a spotter? A what?
A what? What's that for again? Yeah.
And then the other one that they showed us is the Wagoneer S, which we were told is roughly the same size as a Grand Cherokee, and in many respects looks a lot like the new Grand Cherokee, you know, especially like the roof line and everything. Although, you know, it's a little sleeker looking, you know, looks a little more stylish. The front end is quite a bit different. It's got quite a different take on the Jeep front end. You know, you still have the 7 bars there, but signature lighting and everything. So this is a lot smaller than the Wagoneers we have today. And they said it's going to offer about 400 miles of range, 0 to 60 in about 3.5 seconds. So, what do you think of this one?
3.5 seconds. Why? Where are you going?
Because you can.
You know, I look at this and I'm like, oh, the Pacifica is going to be dope.
The electric Pacifica. Now that will be a super van.
That's going to be dope. No, it looks fine. It looks nice. It's, you know, it's exactly what people want who are looking for a Wagoneer. They're looking at the high, you know, Jeeps. Either you're living this off-road dream, or you're living the high, you know, you want an American Land Rover. And I think that's what they're doing. They did a good job with this.
Well, I think, you know, what I was thinking when I saw this, you know, when I saw the way they described this, you know, because it's the same size as the Grand Cherokee. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why would you need two Jeeps that are the same size and the same basic form factor?
Oh, no.
And, you know, but I think what they're trying to do with the Wagoneer sub-brand, you know, it's going to be Jeep and Wagoneer like you have Land Rover and Range Rover.
Oh,
Range
yeah.
Rovers are the more luxury premium models, and then the Land Rovers, you know, and they still have the off-road capability of a Land Rover.
They're just fancy.
Yeah, they're just fancier. So that's what this Wagoneer S is probably going to be, is the yeah. fancy Jeep.
The fancy Jeep. Yeah. I think it looks I'm happy to see both of these. I'm excited to see them both. I think this and the Recon are both going to be pretty good vehicles. I think they're going to be positively received. I mean, we don't know how it's all going to work out till we get more than the cursory information we've been provided.
Let's all remember that the 500E was the best Fiat.
Absolutely. It absolutely was.
FCA, which is now part of Stellantis, it's going to, yeah. Just do what you did with that car, but, you know, update it, whatever. But
and everything will be fine. Yeah. The world will be a happier place.
Yeah, we'll be happy.
So the Recon and the Wagoneer S are both launching in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
The Avenger, for our friends in Europe, will they'll be showing it at the Paris Auto Show next month, and then it goes on sale early in 2023. And by 2025, they will – or is it 25 or 24? 25. By 25 – no, sorry, by 24, by the end of 24, they will have four battery electric Jeeps, mm-hmm. both in North America and in Europe. And they're, you know, for those that might be a little disappointed by the Recon, thinking that they're not going to have a Wrangler EV, there will in fact be a battery electric Wrangler too.
There will be a battery. I mean, they've just gone off the Magneto. Yeah. They've been teasing that thing for too long.
And by the end of 25, early 26, they're going to have EVs in every market segment the Jeep is in today. So from the Renegade up through the Wagoneer. The big Wagoneer. There will be electric version, battery electric
versions.
Yeah,
definitely.
All right. Another EV that was shown before the auto show, but is on the show floor. So if you happen to be going down to Huntington Place, as it's now known, no longer named for the racist former mayor of Detroit, it's on the Chevy stand. The Equinox EV, which is supposed to have a starting price when it launches next fall of $30,000, with a 250-mile range. What do you think of the Equinox EV?
I think it's. I mean, you know what? After driving the Bolt EUV and just being so impressed with how much GM has learned building EVs, just between the Bolt and the Bolt EUV, and it's still on the old. It's on the old architecture. So
Bolt,
Yeah, so with Ultium, I think, and you know, and $30,000, I mean, how can, yeah, and no one's cared about an Equinox until now, to be honest.
I mean, that's true words. That's...
And despite that, it's still the second best selling Chevrolet behind the Silverado.
Yeah,
it's Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like a thing, I need a car, it's sort of invisible. It's an invisible car up until now.
That they sell a ton
it's
of.
It's like Wonder Woman's jet.
It's like the Ford Escape. You know, the Ford Escape is sort of invisible. It's just sort of there. But they sell a ton of them. I remember when I did a drive program once, they're like, what do you think? And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You're going to sell a ton of these. People are going to buy this because it's the right price point. It's what people want. It doesn't have to be flashy or exciting. It just does the thing that people want. And I think the Equinox did that forever. And now it looks cooler.
Yeah. It's actually surprisingly quite a bit longer than the gas Equinox as well. It's like 7 inches longer with a 9-inch longer wheelbase.
So you're going to get some more space.
Yeah. They'll have two battery sizes and front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. So the front-wheel drive extended range one is supposed to have 300-mile range. And then for the all-wheel drive extended range, it'll be 280. And about 290 horsepower with the all-wheel drive. So it's, I think that this is probably actually going to be the most important EV that GM launches in the next couple of years. The Silverado, you know, is going to get a lot of attention, but it's they're going to sell a ton of them, but it's going to be really expensive, way more expensive than this. And, you know, this is probably going to, you know, between somewhere, you know, starting at 30, probably max out somewhere in the low mid 40s, you know, so it's right in the same ballpark as a typical gas compact crossover, you know, the same size. I think this thing's going to sell like crazy.
Oh yeah, it's going to be the invisible car.
I agree.
It looks way cooler than the current Equinox and looks more exciting, but it's also going to continue that invisible sort of like car that blends into the background that everyone's buying.
All right. The other new car that was announced at the auto show, and this one actually was revealed as part of the show. It wasn't revealed a week ago, you know, and then just put on the stand. This was actually shown as part of the event. Is the 2024 Mustang, Ford Mustang,
not the Mach-E,
but the gas Mustangs, and it's built on an updated version of the same platform as the current Mustang. But revised styling. What do you think of the design of this one?
I like the interior changes more than the exterior changes. Is that fair?
No, that's perfectly fair. Yeah.
I don't know. What did you guys think?
It's just, I mean, it feels like a design refresh more than anything, but it's got
like the inside, but it's like, yeah, the outside isn't. Yeah,
they're like, it's a little angrier. It's a little.
And I went to a backgrounder last week and saw it, you know, in private before the show.
Yeah,
and you know, that was one of the things they acknowledged, that they were never entirely happy with the design of the front end design of the current Mustang, of the S550, and so they wanted to do something different. And yeah, I agree. It looks angrier. I'm not sure. I agree. It looks better.
Maybe that's it. Like it's. I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm not super. It's not like, wow, this looks so much better. I'm like, well, it looks different. It's been altered.
Someone's getting punched. That's what's going on. The new Mustang. We're gonna punch somebody.
We're gonna punch somebody. Like it looks. I don't think it looks bad. I just think it's not. It's not like this. I know it's an all new and all that, but it doesn't make this like huge leap forward on the outside, although I'm fine with how it looks. I do think the inside looks dramatically different with the screens. Yeah. So like truly, when you look on the outside, you're like, oh yeah, okay, they revised it and it almost feels just refreshy, like it doesn't feel all new-ish. Then when you look at the inside and you compare the old one to the new one, suddenly there's a dramatic difference. You're like, okay, yeah, this is all new. And it looks much, I think the inside makes it like the old one, it looked dated just because of the way the instrument cluster was done and the old, all the things, kind of this very old school gauge style. At least that's how it seemed to me. Now, screens everywhere you look, screens.
I'm glad, you know, they had those weird faux metal like levers,
rockers,
rockers, which weren't rockers, they only went one way,
half
of them, and they were plastic and they felt plastic. And you're just like, oh, you could. $5, $10, $20, right. $100. Throw the extra $100, bring up the price of the car another $100, and just make these like nice, like metal, like a Mini. Like the
right.
Like if Mini can do it, Ford can do it. And now they just like, you know what, just get rid of them.
So does the inside, you've seen this in person, Sam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And does the inside look, not just the style that we see in the images, but does it, is it better quality-wise? Do you think it looks like they did some? They spent the $100 Robbie just asked him to spend to make things better.
Yeah, no, it definitely looks more premium.
Yeah,
the materials, you know, look a little better. One of the things they talked about, you know, the interior design lead, the color and materials lead. She talked about how, you know, where it's synthetic materials, you know, where they like plastics and stuff, where they traditionally would have done something that looks like animal graining on there, like a leather type of graining. Mm-hmm. They got rid of that and went for, you know, something that is a more obviously synthetic, you know, they call it a technical graining, you know, and there's a couple of different surfaces, you know, depending on what trim levels you get, you know, one that they refer to as white noise, you know, that, you know, there's not, there's not a distinct pattern to it, or certainly not a repeating pattern that you can detect in there. It definitely looks a little more premium, and you know, with the big screens, and so the screens on all but the base EcoBoost version, there's one large panel that spreads across in front of the driver and across the center of the dash. But there's kind of a step in there, so the center touchscreen is a little bit closer to you. And there's the same 13.2-inch display that they have on a bunch of the other newer Fords and Lincolns is there. And then a 12.5-inch cluster display. One of the funny things that it talked about, for the cluster, you can pick from a bunch of different design themes in there. And one of the themes that you can select is for the gauges is Fox Body Mustang. So the gauge, there's a digital representation of the gauges you would have gotten on a late 80s Mustang, like
oh,
the
one that's funny,
like the one I had. Cute. You know, there's a few other themes you can choose from. In talking about how they, you know, kind of what the strategy was with this, yeah, you know, they talked about, you know, trying to pull in, you know, looking for what younger buyers are looking for. You know, it's funny, you know, I was thinking about it afterwards. You know, when they created the original Mustang, you know, when they were conceiving it 50 years or 60 years ago, you know, the goal was to try to create something to appeal to people who were, you know, the baby boomers that were just starting to hit driving age. They were hitting, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old. Mm. And, you know, at that time, you know, GM brought out the Corvair. And, you know, there were other things, other small cars that were appealing to younger buyer, you know, younger drivers. And so they created the Mustang to appeal to those people. And, you know, it still appeals to, you know, those same people that were 16 in 1964.
The exact same people.
The problem is those people aren't going to live forever. Well, maybe it's not a problem, but, you know, the reality is those people are not going to live forever. And so they need to attract younger buyers. And so, you know, younger buyers are often looking for technology and, you know, and how to personalize it and personalize the car in different ways. And so hence you've got these big screens and, you know, they get rid of the twin pod dash layout like they've had for many years, going back to the originals, you know, and you've got these screens and different themes, lots of animations. They used Unreal Engine to create the graphics and the animations on the screens, so it looks really cool. Which, you know, is fine. You know, doesn't necessarily make it drive any better, but you know, it is what it is. And one of the interesting technical changes features that they created, they've gone to an electric park brake, like most new cars have. Mm-hmm. But on the GT, you can get what they call the electric drift brake. And they worked on this with Von Gittin Jr., you know, who's a drift racer. And so instead of, you know, on most of the trim levels, you get just the usual, you know, kind of pull up switch on the dashboard that you often find on newer vehicles for the park brake. And that's what you get on most Mustangs. But if you get the GT with, I think it's the performance pack, or, you know, there's certain option packages. Mm-hmm. You get what looks like a traditional park brake lever.
I can see that the interior shot that I have up on my screen must be that, because it looks like there's a traditional parking brake just to the side, like right by your thigh, like it's on like on the
but
side
of the console.
But
it actually activates an electric park brake.
Yeah.
And when you go in and into the menus on the screen, you have to go. Normally, it acts like a regular park brake, so it, you know, it engages, you know, relatively slowly. But when you go into the menus and you go into track mode, you can turn on drift brake. And so when you pull up the handle, it's almost instantaneous, like five times the brake pressure that you get from a mechanical cable-operated park brake like you had in the old Mustang.
That could be fun.
And, you know, so they, you know, because they were working with Gittin on this, you know, and their original thought was, you know, to make it so you can, you know, you can pull it up, you can control how much braking force you get from it, you know, by the position, just like you would with a mechanical one. And he said, no, for a drift brake, I just want it on or off. And when it's on, I want it on, like, now. You know, full braking force to get to initiate.
So that's what they did?
That's what they did.
That's kind of neat.
You know, doing it in software, you can do that.
You can do whatever you want. Yeah.
So, it'll be interesting to see how that works. Engine wise, still got the 2.3 liter 4-cylinder EcoBoost and the 5-liter Coyote V8, both with more power, supposedly more efficiency this time. No more manual transmission with the 4-cylinder though.
Nice. Automatic only.
Bye bye.
Yeah, but the V8, the GT, you still get a manual. They said they were selling less than 10% of the 4-cylinders with a manual, so they said, forget
well,
it.
What are you gonna do?
It's not worth certifying.
No one's buying it. Doesn't make sense to make it.
But
yeah,
half of the V8 customers go for a manual, so they said, we'll do that one.
That's good.
So
half. So that's a good. That's a nice number. Good job, V8 GT.
And then
customers.
What was really wild, I wasn't actually at the reveal event last night because I was just arriving home from San Francisco. They actually had some surprises that they didn't tell us about at the backgrounder. They announced Dark Horse, which is the Mustang Dark Horse is the new higher performance variant. So this replaces the current Mach 1. So you're going to have something like 500 horsepower from the Dark Horse Mustang. And then there's going to be a whole series of, or a couple of Dark Horse track cars. So the Dark Horse S, both the Dark Horse S and the Dark Horse R are track-only models. They're not street legal. The Dark Horse S is designed for just regular track days. You know, you take it to the track, drive it on the track. The Dark Horse R is designed as a... for like single make race series. So something like, Mazda MX-5 Cup or, Porsche Carrera Cup, that sort of thing. So they're looking at setting up some single make race series for the Dark Horse R. And then they also showed off the upcoming GT3 Mustang for the FIA GT3 class for racing. Also a GT4 variant that's going to be a little lower performance, a little lower price as well. So lots of Mustang stuff yesterday.
All sorts of Mustang fun to be had.
Mustangs.
Yes. On the street or on the track. Let's see. Ram made an announcement too, actually just before the show, that they're discontinuing the Ram 1500 diesel. Which probably shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. But if you still want a Ram diesel, a Ram 1500 diesel, better get your order in now because production ends next February. After that, no more.
No more. Bye-bye.
Yep.
You need to haul stuff without a gigantic, giant truck?
Yeah.
Ram 1500 diesel.
And even with a heavy load, that 3-liter diesel... still gets great fuel economy. It doesn't really to degrade the fuel economy at all. All right, one more, and then we'll have a final segment that Nicole and I actually recorded last week.
Yes.
But before we get to that, the reason I was in San Francisco hanging out with Robbie, we visited Cruise headquarters. And Cruise is the automated driving company that GM acquired in 2016. I think, 16. They've been working on autonomous vehicles for GM. And in June of this year, Cruise finally got their permit to allow them to do paid driverless rides in San Francisco. We got to tour Cruise headquarters and see their hardware labs and all the stuff they're working on and see the Origin, the latest versions of the Origin, which is their purpose-built robo-taxi. Then we went for a ride.
And how was it?
Well, what'd you think, Robbie?
It was uneventful, which is exactly what it should be. There were two instances where, while I was in the vehicle, people who were parked alongside the road, they opened their door and it's slowed down a bit and made sure there was no vehicles coming in. There was a vehicle coming, but it was pretty far away, like a block away. And it put its left blinker on and went slightly into the other lane. And then it came back into its own lane. And then it happened again. And it did it again. And then it took me back to where we were. It was pretty. Yeah, it's a little, you know, it's a bit more cautious than your average driver, which it's a robot, so I'm fine with that. It takes a little bit longer for it to make a right turn. It takes a little bit longer for it to go at a four-way stop, left turns. And as someone who's had to deal with these vehicles in San Francisco, it's better than it was. Because before, you'd be stuck behind one, taking a left turn, like, oh, this is going to take all day.
I'm so never getting there.
Exactly, yeah. So it's definitely not as aggressive as, say, the person who ended up giving me a ride later after the event in the Lyft.
Yeah. I had my first opportunity to ride in one of Cruise's vehicles. You know, and these vehicles that they're running right now are modified Chevy Bolts. And I had my first ride in one of the Cruise Bolts back at the end of 2017. And that was the last time that they did media rides until this week. At that time, the car worked. It did all the things. It made all the right decisions in terms of where to go, when to go. But it was really rough. And the way I describe it is, if you've ever been in a car with a teenager that just got their learner's permit and they're trying to learn how to drive, they're always a little bit too hard on the brake, a little bit too hard on the gas. They jerk the steering wheel instead of smoothly, you know, putting in, you know, breaking a steering angle. And that's what the Bolt was like in 2017.
Yeah.
Now there was none of that. It was smooth, refined. You know, it was, you know, way better than any cab driver I've ever been with. And, you know, it's been almost 15 years since I had my first ride in an automated vehicle at CES in January 2008. I rode in the Chevy Tahoe that won the DARPA Urban Challenge. And I've ridden in many different autonomous vehicles since then. And this was the very first time that I have been in an AV on public roads with no safety driver, no minder from the company. They just handed me an iPhone with the Cruise app on it and said, here you go. Just put in your destination anywhere in the service area, which is about a third of the city of San Francisco right now, and it'll take you there. And, you know, there was no prescribed route. It just, you know, said wherever you want to go, you can put in any random address in the area, it'll take you there. And so for the next 40 minutes, I just, you know, kept putting in different destinations, and it took me there. You know, as soon as I put in a destination, showed the route that it came up with on the map on the screen in front of me, and then went on its merry way. You know, when it was making an unprotected left turn, waited for the left turn signal, there was some pedestrians crossing, you know, on the sidewalk. It had pulled slightly into the intersection. It waited there until the pedestrians were clear, then, you know, finished the turn. When there was somebody double parked and, you know, unloading some stuff from their car, you know, it pulled up behind, you know, it was pulling up behind it, slowed down, eased over a little bit so it could see around it to see if it was all clear. When it saw it was clear, it went around and continued on its way. When towards the end of the ride, when we got back to the restaurant that was the staging area, there was a four-way stop there. It pulled up to the four-way stop, stopped, started to go, and just as it started to go, some pedestrians decided to cross the street there, and so it stopped and waited for the pedestrians to get clear and then proceeded on its way. It was really, really good. This was the best I've experienced to date. Now, granted, you know, 9:30, you know, on a Tuesday night in San Francisco, you know, in in the northern and western part of the city, I don't know what those neighborhoods were.
The Richmond district, essentially. Richmond and Pacific Heights. It's of the city, it's pretty chill area to be driving around.
So there was not a huge amount of traffic, but there was some. You know, and, you know, fair amount of pedestrians to deal with. So, you know, it did good. I was impressed.
It seems they seem to be doing what they're supposed to do. So good job.
And they also announced that on Monday, on the day before, they announced, Kyle Vogt, the CEO of Cruise, announced that within the next 90 days, they're going to be adding driverless robo-taxi services in Phoenix and Austin, Texas. They've been testing in Phoenix for a while, doing deliveries with Walmart for about a year and a half now, so they know the Phoenix area, but they have never tested in Austin. They have no, they've not done any mapping. They haven't done anything in Austin. They are starting from scratch, and they expect to be up and running with driverless robo-taxis in 3 months.
Wow.
So that'll be interesting to watch to see how that works out.
Yeah, I asked them about the other 70% of San Francisco, and they, you know, they said that they're doing this 30% at night during, you know, between 10 p.m. and 5:30 a.m. because they wanted to sort of slowly roll out. They wanted to prove that it'll work, and so now they're talking to the city about permitting for more of the city and extended hours. So, you know, they told me it was more of a we don't want to just jump into the fire. We want like. Ease up to the fire.
That's fair. Just slowly approach the fire.
Slowly approach the fire. And, you know, they had the hiccups. They had the one vehicle that was pulled over by the cop and then pulled away. And then they had all of them, like, trapped at one point. They had a bunch of them trapped at an intersection at one point. And then they had there was an accident with a left turn, unprotected left turn. And so, you know, the response was that these are hiccups. These are parts of, you know, scaling and stuff. And we're like, okay.
The learning process.
I mean, it's definitely nowhere near as horrible as what's happened with like Uber's testing.
They haven't killed anybody yet.
Yeah, yeah. So you know,
that's always a plus.
Yeah.
All right. And the only other thing we've got for this week, last week, Nicole and I recorded a segment that I put on the Patreon feed for our supporters there. And that was our drive impressions of the new Lexus RX. And I will drop that in here. The two of us were both out in Santa Barbara. Was it last week? Week before?
It's a blur. My last couple weeks have been a blur, Sam. It was recent.
Recently, we were in Santa Barbara to drive the new 2023 Lexus RX. And we drove it from a hotel in Santa Barbara up into the hills, into the wine country, to a winery, and got to try four different flavors, at least four different flavors of the RX. I don't know how many flavors of wine you tried.
The wine that was offered after the drive was over, there were like five different kinds. So okay. There's more wine than there were RXs.
Okay. So we saw the new RX in June at Toyota Palooza-thon in Plano. That's when they did the global unveiling of it. Yes. And I don't know about you, but when I saw it, aside from some changes to the front fascia, the grill area, to kind of give it a little bit less of the spindle look.
Mm-hmm.
It struck me as not looking dramatically different from the previous RX.
No, it's a very small four. What they say, they got rid of the spindle grill in favor of, I think they called it like a spindle body or something. They actually had a name for it. Like, it was fancy marketing speak to me. Like, we didn't make it quite so like in your face. So I definitely think that's true, but I didn't think that it was this giant change. Like, you look at it, you kind of have to almost look at it really, truly right from the front before you think, oh, wait, this is different.
Yeah, I mean, the greenhouse, the glass area and the roof and everything looks virtually identical. You know, if you didn't know better, we'd think that they were the same parts. In fact, they may well be the same parts.
You don't know that they're not.
That's true. And, you know, the shaping, you know, the sides have been subtly reshaped, but not dramatically so. But you're right. Yeah, the grill is the main thing that's changed. And, you know, kind of the top part of the spindle where it flares back out again at the top has been made more solid. So it doesn't look so much like the spindle.
I do like that because I've always felt like the spindle, I know that it's a signature thing for them, but I've felt like it was a little much depending on the vehicle, some, you know, which exact Lexus you're looking at. Sometimes you're like, oh, that works. Other times you're like, oh, Lord. Okay. Is there anything besides this grill on this car?
Yeah. I think, you know, it works great on the LC. And, you know, maybe on the LS, but most of the other ones, it's kind of hit and miss.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. But the rest of the vehicle is completely different.
Yes.
Even though it's exactly the same length as before.
Yes.
It does have, I think, about a 2.5-inch longer wheelbase.
Right. Which is supposed to make the legroom better, but we don't have a measurement of how much better. Because they didn't have that yet.
They haven't given us those dimensions. And we didn't have a back-to-back to compare it against the old one to try it out. It should also help with ride quality a little bit. You know, a little extra wheelbase never hurts there. It's also 200 pounds lighter, depending on the configuration, up to 200 pounds lighter, which that's definitely a good thing. And for the first time, I think, ever since the original RX came out like 25 years ago, there's no V6 engine. Yeah, there's no V6 engines this time around.
I didn't
around.
Know that was the first time. I knew that it didn't have one, but I didn't realize that was like the first time ever.
Yeah, from the very beginning, it's always had V6 engines. Whether it was just a straight up gas V6 or a hybrid, it always had a V6 engine in there. And now it's all four cylinders with a mix of 2.4 liter turbocharged four cylinders and 2.5 liter naturally aspirated four cylinders, depending on which configuration you get.
Because there are very, I literally have it in front of me and I still feel like I have to look at it because it's one of those like a 2.5, but that's turbo, but that's not, but that's the hybrid, but that's not a hybrid. It's very confusing.
So let's start from the base model, the RX 350, which in the past would have been a 3.5 liter V6. Now it's a 2.4 liter four cylinder turbo. Front wheel drive, all wheel drive, 275 horsepower. What did you think of this one?
I thought it was good. Actually, I didn't. I thought it was responsive. That was the one I drove for the very first leg of the various legs they had us driving. We drove from the hotel to the winery that sort of served as the hub for the program. And I thought it was nice. I mean, traffic wasn't super heavy. It was a little bit of highway, a little bit of winding roads. And I thought it was a nice, well-mannered engine option. It's not going to knock your socks off. It's not super aggressive, but I also didn't feel like it was underpowered.
No, I agree. And in fact, you know, this Turbo 4 has considerably more torque than the old V6 did. Similar amount of power, but more torque. And with the lighter weight, you know, I think it feels a little more a little more sprightly.
Yes, sprightly. I like that word.
Yeah, it definitely feels more responsive when you're driving it, which I think is a good thing.
I think anybody who drove the prior generation that drove that would agree that especially if you did it back to back, you'd probably see a big difference.
Yeah.
And this one is better to drive.
So next up in the lineup is the RX 350H. Which is the standard hybrid. We used to have a 450H, which was a V6 hybrid. This is the 350 with a 2.5 liter four cylinder. So this is something Toyota has been doing in the last couple of years as they redesigned some of their vehicles. It started with the Highlander. The Highlander also had a V6 hybrid combination. And when they redesigned it, it went to a four cylinder hybrid, a lot more fuel efficient. It's got 33 miles per gallon combined rating for this one, or not? That's what they're estimating right now because it's not officially certified yet. But 33 is pretty good for a vehicle of this type, and 246 horsepower, 233 foot pounds of torque. What did you think about this one?
I like this one. This is actually of the powertrains, and there were four that we drove. This is sort of my fate. This is the one I go for. I thought this was because it was balanced. It's going to get a little bit better fuel economy. We don't, like you said, we don't have the numbers. I thought it handled nicely. I thought it had enough oomph. I was pleased with this one, and I thought it accelerated relatively smoothly while I was driving it. Didn't have any of that sort of herky jerky thing. The base engine gets an 8-speed auto. This gets a CVT, and I thought it was a decent CVT on this one.
See, I think maybe the problem was I made the mistake of driving this after I drove the RX 500.
Well, that was a mistake, Sam.
Yeah. And after driving that one, this one felt kind of sluggish. And, you know, I mean, it's got the classic Toyota Lexus hybrid system, you know, like you said, with the CVT, which means that, you know, when you're accelerating, you can hear the engine rev up to 4,000 RPM and sit there while you're accelerating, waiting for the vehicle speed to catch up to it. Mm-hmm. And I found this one less pleasant.
Really?
And particularly compared to the last RX I drove, which was the 450H, you know, with the V6 and the same hybrid system, you know, that one felt a lot stronger. That one was, you know, closer to about, I think, a little over 300 horsepower. With that combination, whereas this is 246. And even though it's lighter, this one felt less fun to drive.
So you were Matt on this one. See, I drove this one. I had the plug-in before this one. We had a 15-minute drive that literally they gave us because they had one plug-in hybrid that it was kind of like, if you want to get behind the wheel, just so you can have a few minutes behind the wheel, drive it, but you got to bring it back 15 minutes. So I had a really short drive in that. And then I went to this one. So maybe that colored my opinion a little bit.
Yeah. They only had the one plug-in and it was a European spec plug-in. So right. we don't know the full specs of that one, but we can speculate on that.
So we don't even know, like, that's the Euro spec one. Even if we had it here, which we don't yet, would it be that way or would something change? Like, we drove another version. you may or may not ever see on these shores. And so
the plug-in hybrid is launching right away in Europe,
right?
Whereas we're not going to see that one until sometime first half of 2023. Probably later in the spring, that one will launch in the U.S. market. And the main difference with the plug-in hybrid, besides having a bigger battery, they didn't give us the full specs of what we were driving,
right?
But I think we can probably pretty safely assume that it's going to be roughly the same as what's already in the RAV4 Prime, because that powertrain is already certified, EPA certified and everything. And in the RAV4 Prime, that one you have the front hybrid drive system with the 2.5 liter engine, and also a rear electric motor with 53 horsepower and 89 foot-pounds of torque, which gives you a combined total of 302 horsepower with that plug-in hybrid powertrain, and it's all-wheel drive only. And in the RAV4, I think it's rated EPA rated at about 40 or 41 miles of electric range with the 18 kilowatt-hour battery pack. Because the RX is a little bit bigger than the RAV and a little bit heavier, that will probably drop to somewhere in the low 30s, probably between 32 and 35 miles of electric driving range, which is still really good.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, it's slower, but it's still a decent EV range, you know?
Yeah, it's enough, you know, for most people to do their daily driving without using any gas, as long as you plug it in every night.
Right.
So that's the RX 450H Plus. And then the fourth and final variant is the RX 500H F Sport Performance,
yes,
which has the same 2.4 liter turbo that's on the base 350. Plus, it adds a new version of Toyota's hybrid system. And this is the first one that they've done, at least with a transverse engine, that doesn't have a CVT. It's got a standard 6-speed automatic. And because this is the performance variant, 367 horsepower, 406 pound-feet of torque, this one really gets up and goes.
It does. It's definitely the most aggressive of the lot, but when they were, I can't remember the fuel economy numbers that I'm trying to find them that Lexus gave us as their estimates. Cause like you said, we 26. Don't have the EPA numbers. So it's a little bit of a drop there. Like,
it's slightly better. The base 350 is 24.
Mm-hmm.
The 350H is 33. This is 26. So you get a couple more miles per gallon than the base model. Significantly better performance.
Yes, that's true. I don't know. I feel like when you buy a hybrid, like you're buying it because you're trying to get better fuel economy and I guess, you know, save the planet, whatever. But I mean, you're like trying to do that, but you also want that fuel economy. And I feel like you're getting a lot more performance with this one, but your fuel economy bump is so small compared to the gas engine. You know what I mean? I don't know if it
well, and I mean, that's why they call this one the F Sport, because this is the performance model. So it's performance first. But what they're doing is they're giving you the performance without sacrificing fuel economy.
I guess that's true. I guess if you look at it that way. Yeah, if this was just a straight up gas engine, the numbers would be way worse.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. My brain is like, no, hybrid should all be better. And this one's like, ooh, it just drops so much from the non-performance hybrid that freaks out my brain a little bit.
And you know, it's also what they're calling direct four all wheel drive. So it also, like the plug in hybrid, it also has an electric motor on the rear axle. But unlike the plug in, And also the 350H, which is also all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. On the regular hybrids, they bias it towards front-wheel drive, and they basically only kick in the rear electric motor when you're looking for maximum acceleration or when you're getting slip on the front wheels. Mm-hmm. So it's basically front-wheel drive with some rear drive added on, you know, as needed for slip control. This one is biased more towards the rear and more better balanced, and doing at least some front to rear, but not side to side torque vectoring to help with the vehicle dynamics and to help it turn in a little better. And driving on some of those curvy roads, you know, we took the 30 minute loop out from mm-hmm. the winery with this one. And on the curves there, as you get before you get back out to kind of the highway, there's quite a twisty bit of road there. Mm-hmm. This thing was surprisingly fun to drive, more fun than I've ever had in an RX.
Couple
of generations of RX.
It was fun, but you know, I would say that overall, that I found this RX to be, you know, aside from the fact that the styling doesn't strike you as immediately different, when you drive this, it does feel like a new RX. It does feel like they have this. The looks of it may not seem like a giant leap forward, but driving it, you're like, oh, they put some work into this. The powertrains, the handling, all of it, you can really feel it. Each one of these has its own unique feel to it. They're four very different, you know, driving styles, I guess, or driving characteristics to them, but they do feel like this is all a step forward for the RX. So I think people who are looking at the RX or people who are, you know, they're fans of it or considering it are going to be really pleased with what Lexus did in this generation.
Yeah, I totally agree. This one overall across the board drives way better than any previous mm-hmm. version of the RX.
Yeah.
All right. So the other thing that, you know, besides powertrains that has been substantially changed is the interior.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more trackpad.
Praise the Lord, the trackpad is gone. I hated that thing. I hated it.
It was pretty awful.
It was awful. And they were always like, no, you know, we made it better. I'm like, no, you just made it awful in a different way. Every time they try to change how it never worked right. And the new system is so good. It's so good. I really, really like the new system. Do you like it, Sam?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely vastly superior to the previous generations of Lexus infotainment. There's still a couple of issues I have that are common, you know, because the basic underpinnings of this are shared across Lexus and new Toyota vehicles. So mm-hmm. it's the same basic infotainment system, slightly different skins on it.
Right.
From a functional standpoint, my only real complaint with it is this has a 14-inch touchscreen. So it's a pretty good size touchscreen.
Mm-hmm.
But Toyota and Lexus's decision to only allow you to have one thing on the screen at a time.
Oh,
You know, you've got a lot of screen real estate there. Not having the ability to have, you know, a main larger pane and then a smaller pane for your navigation on the big pane, and then you know, your media controls on the smaller pane, so you could, you know, hit fast forward or hit pause and things like that, mm-hmm. Without having to switch modes, you know, just have it readily accessible there. And I've had the same complaint with the newer Toyotas. It's a fairly minor complaint because you can also do a lot of that stuff with voice control.
True.
Assuming the voice control works.
But I feel like it's pretty good. Like, I tried it and I feel like it's better than some of them. Less often did I find myself yelling at it. You know, you'll do you just have to say, hey, is it just, hey, Lexus, you have to say? Or so instead of doing like, hey, Lexus, turn up the radio. Hey, Lexus, turn up the radio. I never got to that volume. So it listened to me more and heard me eventually. And I love that it responds. It knows whether it's the driver or the passenger.
Yeah. Because if you look up on the headliner, there's a microphone on each side.
Yeah. So whoever talks, it then responds in that direction. If the passenger is
the you'll
one
hear it coming out of the speakers on one side or the other.
Which makes it feel like, oh, it knows me. It sees me.
Well, therein lies the problem.
Yes.
So when I've tried this system previously on the NX and on the Tundra and the BZ4X, it actually worked really well. and the voice control always worked really well. But there was something in the vehicles that they had at this drive, pre-production software. I don't know what the issue was. But I was driving a Tanya Gazdik.
Yeah.
And it absolutely refused to respond to my voice.
Really?
Yeah. She would say, "Hey, Lexus," and do whatever, and it would work just fine. It was perfect.
That's
Every time
bizarre.
I said, "Hey, Lexus," nothing.
Nothing?
It completely ignored my voice.
Did it matter whether you're in the driver's seat?
No, I tried it
passenger?
From both sides.
It didn't make a difference.
Nope. And even if, you know, if Tanya said, "Hey, Lexus," and then I tried to give it a command, it would still ignore me.
It was like, no, not having it.
Yeah, it's like, no.
I didn't have any troubles with mine. It's your deep, manly voice.
I think I'm the only person that had an issue with it, at least on the day we were driving.
That's interesting. I wish I'd driven your car right after, like the exact one that you drove after you.
It was like, this is in four different cars. And the 350, the 350H, the 500H, and the plug-in. I tried it in all of them. And none of them would respond to my voice.
Now I want to know if any of the other guys on the program have it. Like, because, you know, I didn't have that problem. Neither did Eileen. Neither did Tanya. But they're all women's voices. I wonder if it was something was off with it. Truly, like detecting a deeper man's voice.
They did acknowledge that, you know, it was still pre-production software. There's still some calibration to do. So maybe that was it. I don't know. But presumably
somewhere an audio engineer is playing your voice over and over, trying to see if the system will recognize it and if he's calibrated it right now.
The RX won't be going on sale till later this fall, probably like late November or December timeframe. So they've got some time still to fix this. And like I said, the system has previously worked fine for me in other Toyota vehicles. You know, and even, you know, after I complained to Toyota about that, you know, the lack of having two windows on the screen, they said, "Well, you can just do it with your voice." And I tried it with my voice and it always worked really well, but except in the RX for whatever reason.
And, you know, I do agree with you, the two windows thing, because when you say that is a lot of real estate to not be able to do that. I didn't really find it a problem that when you said, I'm like, yeah, you know what, if I was really driving and using this every day, I'd want to be able to have the smaller window with this, you know, big one for navigation or whatever, small one for other functions. Yeah, that is weird on a 14-inch screen.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm trying to remember, did they give us pricing information yet?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I don't believe we have any pricing.
Yeah. So I think that'll be coming closer to on sale this fall. I think the 350, the 350H, and the 500H are all going to be built here in the U.S. I think in Georgetown, Kentucky is where they're building those. And then the plug-in hybrid will be imported from Japan sometime next year. Mm-hmm. Overall, just a huge improvement, you know. Regardless of what you might think of the design, and lack of change of the design, the driving, the interior, everything else about it, really good. Was really, really overall impressed with this thing.
Yeah, same. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a good series of changes that they made. The overall improvement. We have little, you know, nitpicky things to pick on, but it's good if all you can find are nitpicky things.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for the 2023 Lexus RX first drive impressions. And with that, we will say goodbye for this week, and we'll talk to you next time.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.